I tracked the flaring and fading of the scent as the wind veered, a block down and two over, turning back, zeroing in. I had to backtrack even farther to skirt the side of a falling down building that might have held offices once.
What's wrong with this picture, Jill?
The structure wasn't up to code, and there was crime scene tape over the doors. The tape was bleached and fluttering, no longer a bar to passage. The door itself had been broken in and repaired with plywood, also bleached out. But the padlock through the hasp screwed into the plywood, holding the door shut, was so new it glittered like a diamond under the fierce light. I touched the lock tentatively, sensitive fingertips scraping rough, new-bought metal. The smell was stronger here. I thought about it for a little bit. Then I wrapped my hellbreed-strong right-hand fingers around the clasp and wrenched it free of the thin plywood. I could have broken the padlock itself, but why do it the hard way? I peered into darkness. Spiderwebs fluttered, and I thought of scorpions. The tattoo high up on my right thigh prickling briefly. A concrete-floored hallway vanished into gloom, and I kept my back to the wall as I stepped in. I started working my way down the corridor. There was no hint of scurf, but that reek of gunpowder and death called me. A chill that had nothing to do with external temperature drifted down my back. I kept the gun low and ready, and my left hand curled around a knife hilt. Locked doors frowned at me. None of them smelled very interesting, and they all had dust on the doorknobs that gritted under my fingers. The corner took a sharp bend. I covered it and swung around, found the walls and roof soaring away from me as the hall turned into the interior of the building proper. The lower floors had been converted to open space for something once upon a time. I moved forward. On a wood floor littered with slow-rotting cardboard junk was Officer Winchell, a curly-headed, tall young man in blues with a mask of bruising. Nylon rope knotted around his wrists. His arms pulled grotesquely far behind his back as he lay sprawled in the final indignity of death. A lake of congealed blood spread out from him, and the wooden chair he'd probably been tied to was overturned another four steps away, one of its legs sitting right in the still wet-looking stain. He'd been shot four times in the chest, close range. His back was soaked through. Hollow points can puncture and bleed dry, sometimes even if you're wearing a vest. Extremely close range, and he'd bled out under the Kevlar intended to keep him alive.
What the hell is going on here?
I looked away from the body, glanced at the hall. Someone had to have locked the door on the outside.
Did Winchell let himself in over there? Or was he overpowered and dragged in?
His gun was gone. Four shots to the chest was serious business. The mask of horror that was his face was pre-mortem, but only just. Tied to a chair, untied, and shot.
Why do you assume he was tied to the chair, Jill?
I examined the chair then. There was some blood spatter, and a hank of blood-stained nylon rope still clinging to it. Blue and white striped nylon rope. I chewed at my lower lip, thinking it over.
Jacinta Kutchner had hung with blue and white striped nylon. Just this kind. The same kind Winchell's hands were bound with. A cop commits suicide. The widow gets killed. And there's this rope at the scene. And now this. This type of rope's as common as a sneeze. They sell it in hardware stores. But to have it here in 2 out of 3 murders related to police officers? Something smells here indeed, Jill.
I was wasting daylight even looking at this. A scurf infestation would spread until burned out or contained. This was a stack of human murders with no inhuman agency I could see behind them. Not my problem. I was already stretched thin enough as it was. But Officer Winchell, I didn't even know his first name, didn't stare at me because his eyes had puffed closed. Someone had beat the hell out of him and shot him. So we were looking at revenge or money, most probably. You don't get beaten like that just because someone hates your haircut. Sudden certainty bloomed under my breastbone like a poisonous flower. I looked down at Winchell's grotesquely puffed face. I noticed all at once how hot it was, and wondered why I'd smelled the cordite first and not the death.
Maybe because I've gotten used to the smell of decay.
As used to it as I can get, that is.
Daylight's wasting, Jill. Call this into homicide and have a word with Piper when you can. Get your ass in gear.
But first, I stood gazing down at Winchell. The lump curdled in my throat.
Nobody should have to die like this. Or like Kuchner's widow.
Monty's called me in, Winchell. You tell Jacinta I'm on the job. You can let Marv Kuchner know, too. Galena looks like a film star from the 30s. Her sleek dark hair is Marcel waved, and her cat-tilted green eyes, set in a pale face, would have been worth a lot of hope in Garbo's Hollywood. Each All Hallows' Eve, I want to buy her a flapper's dress and an ostrich feather, but I never get around to it. Besides, she'd probably take offense. You never can tell with a sanctuary. They've got some funny ideas.
You're already up on your garlic, but a little more won't kill you.
Galena pushed the plunger down and pulled the needle free, tamping a cotton ball down and taping it with deft motions.
Ouch!
I leapt to my feet and swung my chicken wing bent arm. Garlic serum burns like hell.
Jesus Christ, that hurts.
Well, if you'd prefer getting all slimy and blood-hungry...
The sanctuary snapped the point off the needle deftly in a pint-sized biohazard container and scooped up the tray. Sunlight veered through the skylights and burnished her kitchen table. She lived upstairs over her shop, just a regular garden-variety occult store, unless you know what you're about. Then you realize you could find just about everything a serious practitioner of sorcery needs, and practically everything a were or witch might need as well in her little store. I should stock up on ammo.
I want all the goddamn ammo I can carry if we've got scurf.
Again? Hang on, I'll fetch it. Will it be on account? I can spot you a few hundred.
No, I got it. Business has been good lately.
Are you going to keep the Glocks or switch to something else?
I'll stick with the Glocks. But fill me up on hollow points. And the silver grain armor-piercing rounds. I want to be nastier than usual.
Where?
Theron, coming to take me to the dance.
I picked up my shredded coat. The walls quivered slightly, the sanctuary binding responding to my nervousness and Galena's as well. Inside their little houses, sanks are the law. The price they pay is being more vulnerable outside than even a weak, untrained psychic. But they usually fix it so they don't have to go outside much, and hunters and wares, not to mention most hellbreed, will beat the tar out of anyone hassling a sanctuary. Neutral supply of necessities is the least of the services they provide. I gauged the fall of sunlight and glanced at the kitchen clock. Elvis in a red jacket, his hips swaying regularly. The days were long, but still, every hour of sunlight gone heightened the possibility of a night fight with Scurf. Enough to give any hunter shivers.
If I wasn't already halfway too twitched out between tripping over dead cops and getting shot full of garlic.
The scar throbbed. I reached over, fingers trembling, and stripped the leather cuff off my right wrist. I stared down at the band of paler even than my usual milk skin. Air hit my skin with 1,000 sharp needles, suddenly alive again. My nose tingled, picking up the reek of garlic, silver, the dry smell of herbs hung in the large pantry, wet earth from the greenhouse on the roof, fur and cologne that was a ware downstairs, Galena's perfume, the incense, and power of her shop. I examined the lip print. It wasn't any bigger. It was just the same as it had always been. And when I tipped it up into the sunlight, uncomfortable allergic warmth spilled up my arm.
God damn you, Perry. Getting into my head again. Worming your way in.
I slapped the cuff on and buckled it.
Jill!
What's up?
Barrio's emptying out. One of the cougars ran across Spore on the east side, right near where you sat. They're tracking now.
Great, let's roll. Galena, that ammo, please?
Galena came up the stairs, her hands full of cartridges stacked on a red cloisonné tray.
Be careful, Jill.
I can't be careful, Galena. It's not in the job description. Galena looked almost pathetically hopeful. Her gaze touched my face, flinched away, and found Theron, who leaned against the wall between us, running his long fingers through his hair. I stowed the ammo and checked to make sure the guns were easy in their holsters, ran my fingers over the knife hilts. Come on, Theron. I'll drive.
Give me a second, Jill.
Meet me outside. Outside, it was a solid 90 in the shade. The scar throbbed wetly as I stamped across the street toward my Impala and stopped, suddenly. Right in the middle of the ribbon of concrete, heat waves shimmering up on either end of the block. The sensation of being watched spilled goose flesh down my back. You don't live long as a hunter by ignoring that feeling. I turned a full 360 in the middle of the road, scanning the buildings, roofs, the sidewalks, contemplating all the angles.
Who would be watching me? And in the middle of the day, no less, when the sun's power is at its highest.
I concentrated, still as a cat watching a mouse hole.
Come on. Stick your nose out, whoever you are. Come and get me.
Something punched me hard in the chest. I staggered, the wind knocked out of me. It didn't hurt until I tried to roll over. The scar on my wrist exploded with furious power as my punctured heart struggled to beat. Bullets tearing through my body, shattering, spilling blood steaming on the road.
No! Jill! Theron, help her!
Saul. My lips tried to shape the word. A bubble of something hot broke on them, ran down my chin. Alone and unprotected in the middle of acres of burning road, except I was being dragged by one arm. The scar burned, working inward toward the bone, burrowing in with sick delight.
Take care of her, Galena. I'm going back out.
Don't you dare, Jill! Don't you dare die on me!
My heart felt like it exploded, and my body convulsed. The scar had actually shocked me, just like a defibrillator. Sparks crackled from the charms lacing my hair. Another lightning shock, this one different from the first, slammed through me. The flayed, exploded meat of my heart was a live coal buried in my chest, systems struggling to deal with the sudden trauma and loss of blood pressure.
Stay with me, Jill.
This time it was Galena. The power had her distinctive flavor of incense and growing green things. Her blow went straight to the heart. Cells regrew, each one a scream of pain. Tearing, horrible, agonizing heat coalesced, snapped into a lump in the upper left quadrant of my ribs. The scar chortled to itself as electricity popped. I arched, mouth full of blood and eyes bulging, a scream locked behind the clotted stone in my throat.
Don't fucking dare die on me, Jill Kismet! I've seen two hunters go in my time, and I won't lose you!
I curled over on my side, spitting to clear my mouth of blood and lung fluid, the deep, drilling ache in my chest intensifying with each labored pulse.
God damn.
Good girl, Jill. That's my good girl.
I retched, coughing and choking to clear passageways violated by lead and fluid.
They're gone. Tell me she's okay.
I'm fine.
She's as fine as you can get when you've lost all your blood.
I haven't lost all of it, damn it. It still hurts. There must be some left.
The agony receded, becoming just garden variety pain.
Oh, this I can deal with.
Now is time for the waking up, Melaya.
Mikhail's voice, memory sloshing inside my skull.
If you do not wake up, Melaya, I will hit you!
He never said anything he didn't mean. I struggled to get up, to fight.
Relax, killer. Take it easy.
Hands on my aching shoulders. So familiar. The deep, rumbling sound. Aware, purring to ease another's distress.
What the fuck?
fuck was that?
Someone just tried to kill you, Kismet. An assault rifle from a rooftop halfway down the street. You know anyone who drives a blue Buick?
What the fuck?
Just lie still for a moment. I'm gonna get the first aid kit.
Best of luck to you. I don't think I need a band-aid.
The wearer crouched over me, a bulk radiating safety. He didn't smell exactly like Saul, but it was comforting nonetheless. I shifted, let the clutch off, and the Impala responded, leaping forward.
Oh, shit!
Baron grabbed for the dash. I rammed the car into third gear like it was going out of style, goosed it, shifted up to fourth, and put the pedal to the floor.
Jesus, Jill!
Men, they never like my driving. Nobody likes my driving. I've never been in a single accident. Basic precognition takes care of that. And the cops all know my car well enough to leave me alone when I'm bending the laws of physics and traffic to get somewhere.
They don't like to think about why I hurry, or what I might be hurrying to get to.
We took a corner like it was on rails, and I thought about who would want to kill me.
Blue Buick and regular ammo. Not even silver. Anyone coming after a hellbreed-tainted hunter is gonna have silver ammo. It wouldn't kill me, but it would at least mean someone knew what they were doing, knew it would take me longer to heal, and hurt like a motherfucker.
We roared onto the east side a few minutes earlier than I'd thought. My traffic karma was still holding.
Ah, Christ. You okay, Jill?
Oh, never better. Getting shot just pisses me off for a boy. Now I'm aching to take it out on a whole nest of scurf.
You better calm down.
Theron was right. Angry is the last thing you want to be in a nest. Anger is good fuel, yes, but it clouds judgment. And a hunter can't afford that. Not thinking straight is one step away from getting your ass blown off.
And I've already had that today, thank you very much.
Percoa Park lay under a motionless flood of hard, bright light. The trees looking dusty and grass scuffed to yellow wherever the sprinklers didn't reach. A baseball diamond simmered kitty corner, and the street lamps over the bus shelter Michael Spillum had spent his last human moments on Earth standing in were just visible. I caught flickers of motion between the trees, and Theron's face eased a bit. The wearer's stride lengthened, and I glimpsed the predator in him. It's easy to forget sometimes that they're built for hunting. They do it, just like they do most things, far better than humans. He raised his head, his dark hair suddenly more alive, curling a bit longer, and sniffed the air. My nose was sensitive, even with the cuff on. Fur.
Musk.
The smell of healthy animals, sandy dust, and tinder dry bark. An outside smell. A good smell. One that means safety. Wares have been allied with hunters ever since the beginning, working back to back. Even through the Middle Ages, and that was a right fuck of a time to be a ware or a hunter, between the Inquisition, the open mouths to hell, and the general state of chaos. Wares provide muscle and speed when it comes to hunting rogue wares, backup when facing down traitors, and general support, since human hunters are spread so thin. Hunters keep things smoothed over with the police, function as leaders who don't have to work by consensus during crisis times, and take on Hellbreed. One of the few things wares can't do as well as a human. It takes a hunter to kill a Hellbreed. Or a sorrow. The thought of the sorrows tasted like bitter ash before I turned it aside. Faerun and I loped down a slight hill toward a stand of cottonwoods. My clothes were torn up again. But at least my weapons were still okay. And my rosary.
Shoot me all you want, but if you shoot one of my knives, my blessed charms, or God forbid my guns, I'm gonna get pissed.
Huh. Good turnout tonight.
The small clearing was full of wares. The lambent eyes turned to me as soon as I brushed past an anonymous trashwood bush and into full view. They were too polite to ask what the hell had happened. And sadly, it's more common than not to see me when I've just been through the ringer. Hunting is a messy business.
Trackers are on it.
Yeah. Not too far from here, zeroing in on a couple blocks.
I looked towards the lean, tall woman who spoke. Lioness, from the look of her. She had the characteristic broad face and sleek arms, muscle moving supple under honey skin.
We're burning daylight.
Patience, Rubio.
Rubio was a slim young male, barely past puberty if you could believe his skinny build, with the prominent nose of a birdwear. Brown feathers were tied into his shag of a haircut, and he made a graceful, contained movement expressing impatience and controlled enthusiasm all in one.
Patience is not a virtue, it's a survival tactic.
I set my back against the bole of a cottonwood and closed my eyes. My heart was thumping a little harder than I liked. A rebuilt heart, shattered by a bullet less than half an hour ago. Suddenly, my eyes snapped open. Everywhere in the clearing was standing poised and looking in the same direction, the same way a flock of birds will wheel with tremendous in-flight precision. They broke, as if there were some prearranged signal, some running, others merely loping. Theron glanced over his shoulder at me.
You must no fuss. The trackers have found something.
They communicated in that way wares sometimes have, through instinct, pheromones, or just sheer air.
No more time for thinking. The hunt's underway.
Running with wares is like hunting on full moon nights, when everything goes just slightly sideways, and it can either be dead quiet, or a slip-tilting scream fest from beginning to end, not even stopping at dawn. There's the same breathless expectation, the same pulse in the air, hitting the back of the throat like copper-tinged wine. I know almost every hollow and corner of my city, and it's that knowledge that lets me keep up. Even Hellbreed speed has a hard time when it comes to wares in full asshole mode. They run like quicksilver, not like the Hellbreed's habit of blinking through space too fast for mortal eyes.
God damn it.
I'd have suspected someone's nose was off, but hunting scurf is a wear specialty.
Near the water?
Strange. They usually hate water, and the place is up on stilts, for Christ's sake. Hard to keep warm.
Not in the summer. It'll be a regular tinderbox in there.
I hate getting sweaty. Whenever you're ready, Jill.
I don't think you can ever be ready for this, Bavron. Let's not burn any more sunshine.
No!
Wares swarmed through the boarded-up windows and kicked in doors. More tearing off the HVAC vents on the roof and boards from the windows, letting in sword shafts of sunlight. I popped the roof hatch. It wasn't just a nest. It was a full-blown nightmare. I leapt in, dropping straight into a pile of scurfs. There was an exploding, sweet, sick smell everywhere, sinking into hair and clothes and even the boards of the decrepit building. Theron landed lightly, the cat in him overcoming the man as he dropped. His claws sprang free, the cat rising to the fore like smoke. And he unzipped the scurf, leaping for me in one graceful motion. In a miracle of reflex, I clocked another scurf on the head with the butt of my pistol in one motion as I spun towards him, just in time. Another bear leapt, colliding with the scurf and knocking it away. Most fights, a hunter takes point and the wares watch her back. Facing down a rogue ware or scurf reverses that. A hunter is there to coordinate, to provide a leader who doesn't have to function by consensus, and to clean up any problems with the authorities afterward. In the middle of a fight with scurf, especially full-blown scurf, with cartilaginous bones, powdery slime acid coating, and active viral agents in their saliva and coating, even in their exhalation and pheromone wash, you want wares, because they do not hesitate, and they are largely immune to the viral agents. Their systems peculiarly antithetical to scurf infection. It mostly falls to a hunter to give the coup de grace, to keep out of the way otherwise. It's only a little harder than it sounds. There were so many of them, 50 at least, drifts of them jammed into corners, wedged between boxes, waking to find death moving among them with fangs and fur, claws and lambent eyes. That was the first wrongness. There should not have been so many. People go missing all the time. It's true. It's a fucking epidemic. But a nest this big should have been a huge pattern of disturbance. The second wrongness was how old they were. Scurf get more bendy and vicious the longer they survive. And these were full-blown, 2 weeks to a month old, scurf equivalent of Methuselah's. Their skin glowed with pallid moon sickness, and their bodies had become humanoid instead of human. Pot-bellied, loose flaps and wattles under their hyper-distending jaws, skinny arms, far too long and attenuated to be as strong as they are, spindly legs that bend in ways no humans would, and new tadpole legs beginning from the muscle mass of what had been the glutes, and also to a lesser degree from the groin. Sexual difference only showing itself in the savagery and thrust of a scurf's attack. Those that used to be male go for your throat. Those that used to be female go for the chest or the gut, impatient to get at the entrails.
Battle of the sexes right there.
If it wasn't so deadly, it might even be funny. I jammed the muzzle against a hairless skull. No time to think. There were more wares pouring into the building's wide-open inner space, reinforcing their brothers and sisters. The sense of rawness grew as I killed another wounded scurf. Poisonous fluid spattering, acid hissing on my sleeves and against my pants. My boots slipped and slid in powdery slime. I choked on hot, candied fumes as the warning crested, running down my back in rivers of sharp metal insect feet. Oh, shit. I jerked around to see a slice of floor opening. Darkness at its mouth as more scurf boiled out from the trap door and leapt for me. I fell back, pistol raised. The wares wheeled and poured past me, a tide of glowing eyes, feathers, and fur.
Maybe we've got a handle on this thing.
Suddenly, the world turned over, the scar clotting with iron prickles on my wrist and burrowing into the bone.
What the fuck?
Another hole stove itself into the wall, sunlight streaming. A male hellbreed with a glaring white stripe in his black hair hurtled through and hit me so hard my teeth snapped together. I twisted, and the knife was in my hand, a natural movement. I rammed it forward into the hell-tainted flesh. The breed's teeth champed down, scant millimeters from my cheek, and the smell, the sweet corruption of its breath and the sick candy of scurf mixing to bring up everything my stomach had ever thought of digesting in a painless mess.
I can't throw up, I'm too goddamn busy.
Wood splintered as I was rammed through a wall. I landed in a natural enclosure. Wooden boxes stacked up on three sides. The hellbreed coming in fast. And scurf on every side, baring their teeth as they scented me. One lunged toward my leg, teeth bared. Before I could respond to the scurf's leg bite, the skunk-haired hellbreed was on me. My knife was still buried in its chest, and my free hand came up with another one, the gun still in my left hand. Yeah! The breed jerked and twisted in midair, coming down on me, claws out. Yeah! We collided, and it flung me back, even as it bled runnels of dying foulness. A corner of something clipped my head hard enough to break a human neck, and I was out.
Jim!
Hold her head.
Consciousness returned along with sound and color, rushing into the cup of my brain. I wasn't ready for it. Who is? I looked down towards the searing pain in my leg. The wound was red and smoking, and the flesh of my calf boiled as the viral agents worked their way up. The scar ran with sick, hot delight, burrowing into skin bubbling with heat, and the agony became immense. Compressed, a point of hurtfulness in the gloom of twilight consciousness.
I'm bitten.
I tried to leap up and failed. I blinked.
I have eyelids after all.
Pain receded a little bit, and that meant I could function.
And if I can function, I have to.
Jill, stop trying to move. Calm down. We're trying to help.
What's going... Where?
Something's not right.
Where's Dust Circle?
He's on the res. His mother has the wasting.
Theron braced me, his hands on my shoulders, oddly familiar for a stranger's touch. It felt like Saul holding me. The purr he used when I was really hurt, but the danger was past resonating in my bones.
We should call him.
No.
Easy there, Hunter. Relax. Just give yourself a second, Joe. Lay back down or I'll sit on you.
I lay back. My muscles were limp as wet noodles, the skin over them throbbing as if I had the mother of all sunburns. The entire conscious surface of my brain retreated from the glare of sunlight, seeking a deep, dark hole to hide itself in, to wrap itself in velvet unconsciousness, until it got over dying twice in less than 2 hours. The bite on my calf lost its pulsing heat, the feeling of infection retreating along a map of veins.
Someone's trying to kill her. Maybe more than one someone.
The voices left. I floated for a while, free of pain. I came to on my couch, a huge orange naugahyde monster that was actually pretty respectable once Saul got around to slip covering it with some cream linen he'd found on sale. Darkness was kind, but I had to open my eyes.
Just stay where you are.
Theron's face loomed over me. His eyes glowed orange in dimness. Gray dawn edged up through the skylights, and the lights in the kitchen were on, sharp yellow blocks throwing shadows into the living room. A single lamp burned at the far end of the couch.
I thought I heard you. It's 5 a.m., nobody else has died, we're running sweeps. Your ass stays on that couch, Jill. Clear?
How many? How many did we lose?
Two down. The scurf swarmed your body. We had a hell of a time with it. Saul called.
Oh, Christ. What did you tell him?
What did you want me to do, lie? He'd skin me. We're supposed to look after you, Hunter.
He doesn't need to be worrying about me, Theron. I can take care of myself.
You got bit, Jill. You're fighting off the infection, but it was close. How many times have you almost died recently?
I wish I knew.
Guilt pricked under my skin. Two wares, probably with families. Dead because I hadn't been fast enough to kill a hellbreed popping up in the middle of a scurf hole. I would have asked Theron who, but it would be rude. They don't speak much of the dead, and they especially don't often name them.
Well, start at the beginning. What's been going on?
Where do I begin? There was a traitor that burned down a warehouse. An Arceus I killed the other night. Last night? Or something. The scurf. Those disappearances have only been going on for a week or so.
Anything else?
Perry called. And Monty. A friend asked me to look into something.
Like what?
Some murders. Without a Nightside connection. So far, all I have are three bodies and nothing else.
There was a small pile of silver charms on the coffee table, tangled in red thread. They'd probably fallen out when the Hellbreed hit me, or gotten torn off in the heat of battle. I did feel like handfuls of my hair had been ripped out. I almost never got my hair cut. Saul sometimes trims it for me, but I was probably rocking the punk look right about now. The back left of my skull was tender, and I could feel the scab there when my face moved. My neck ached, a vicious, dull pain.
God damn. Son of a bitch hit me hard enough to knock me out of my hair. That's a first.
I didn't know you did murders without a Nightside connection.
All the murders I personally commit have Nightside connections, Theron. Oh, God. I've got a headache.
I could tell. You're usually much nastier than this.
Fuck you, Ware.
Nice try, but doesn't have your usual snap. Have some OJ. It'll help.
Where's the bourbon?
Do the non-Nightside murders have anything to do with someone using plain lead to kill you?
I don't know, Theron. The bigger mystery is a fucking hellbreed in the middle of a scurf nest. Not to mention, the nest was in a place where no scurf would build it.
So, more than one person is trying to kill you.
Christ, I hope so. If this is only one enemy, I'm gonna turn in my Hunter's Union card.
Damn, you guys got a union? I'll go turn the coffee pot on. You've been out about 14 hours. Missed a whole night of fun and games, cleaning up scurf stragglers and all.
Shit. Anyone call? Other than Saul, that is?
Your pager buzzed once or twice. Otherwise, quiet as a mouse.
I spotted said pager sitting on the coffee table. Monty had paged me twice, Carp once. And the last number sent a cold finger tracing down my spine.
God damn it.
I'm running backup on you until this is over. Saul's request, so don't argue.
What exactly did you tell him?
I told him you were fine and sleeping, and that we have scurf. Told him you were playing everything by the book and there was no need to worry, but I'd keep an eye on you. He asked me to not just keep one eye, but both on you, since you have, and I quote, a habit of getting yourself beaten to a pulp. He calls it your particular brand of charm.
I do love my work.
I didn't tell Saul someone tried to assassinate you. If he finds out, we'll both be in Dutch. So you better get cracking.
Did you mention coffee or not?
I did.
I peeled up the remains of my trouser leg and looked at my calf. There was an angry red chunk taken out of the muscle, already scabbed over. It looked nasty, but the flesh around it wasn't inflamed. There was no telltale blue network of virals spreading around its edges. It was just a bit of missing meat, about the size of a mouth, and I couldn't tell which shape the final scar would take. It was healing far slower than anything else, and the scab on my head was still throbbing. I pushed the shredded leather down, smoothed it over my leg. Why would Perry be calling me now? Especially now, with someone trying to kill me and scurf in town. It was too neat a coincidence not to be suspicious, coming from him. And with a hellbreed bursting in on a bunch of scurf, a skunk-haired breed who didn't look familiar.
Well, I don't know every hellbreed in town.
I weighed the idea of going into the Monde Nuit to ask Perry a few questions, preferably up close, personally, with a few silver-loaded bullets.
Ugh.
Monty was out of his office. I left a message on his voicemail. I dropped down to sit on my bed. The smell of hunter, leather, and wear reminded me again of Saul. My hair dripped. I'd taken a few minutes to reattach all the loose charms, braiding some in with red thread, tying others close to the scalp. I shook my head to hear the reassuring jingle, then dialed Karp's cell.
Carver.
It's Jill. You bellowed?
I need to see you, somewhere private.
Wow, miracles never cease. I'm a married woman, Carp. What's up?
No shit, Kismet. It's serious, and I need to see you now.
Is it a case?
It's the Kutchner case.
Where?
You know Picaro's on 4th?
The hole in the wall downtown? I can be there in half an hour. Care to drop me a clue?
Not without seeing you. Try to be inconspicuous.
I'm a hunter, Carp. I could be standing right next to you and you wouldn't know if I wanted it that way. I'm bringing a friend.
Come alone.
Can't. Don't worry. It's one of my people.
Fine.
What the hell is going on? To get into Picaro's, you have to go down 2 flights of stairs from a plain door on the blank side of a skyscraper set in a hill. The main part of the bar doubles as a restaurant. A dim little hole with frayed carpet, sticky tabled red vinyl booths, and stained glass lamps hanging everywhere. The place was deserted, except for the bar, where a blue haze of cigarette smoke whirled slowly. A few anonymous male shapes sat in the cloud bank, and the waitress drifted like a ghost among them. Picaro's main claim to fame is their $2 drink specials and large cheap breakfasts you can nurse a hangover on. Of course, they're nothing compared to a Ware's cooking, but you take what you can get. I was actually even contemplating a second breakfast as I slid into the booth opposite Carper, my replacement trench folding. There were deep shadows under the Deet's blue eyes, and he'd taken off his tweed jacket. An actual tweed jacket, for Christ's sake. He looked like an English professor in mufti, except for the shoulder holster and the flat, oily stare of a cop who's seen too much. He was also scruffy, sandy stubble standing out on his chin and the flat planes of his cheeks. Carp's face is built like a skewed skyscraper, all angles that should work together, but don't. He's handsome in the untraditional way of a character actor. Theron dropped into the booth right next to me, and Carp opened his big mouth.
Jesus, are you dating another one of those fur rugs?
Maybe she just likes a little more than skin boys can give. Officer.
For Christ's sake, save me from males and their pissing contests. It's Detective Theron. And you're looking at my temporary backup, Carp. Which means he's deputized and technically fellow law enforcement. So quit yanking his chain and tell me what's on your tiny little mind. Sunlight's wasting. And I have other business to handle. Like finding out who's trying to kill me and why. If I knew one, I'd know the other. Carp cupped his coffee in both palms, studying Theron. So, why don't you want anyone seeing me with you, Carp? Afraid people might start to talk? Carp's face immediately set itself hard like he'd sucked on a lemon. He reached under the table. Theron stiffened, an infinitely small movement, and I wanted to roll my eyes. Carp's hand came up holding nothing but his badge, which he flipped open and set on the table between us.
I'm Internal Affairs. I had a hell of a time getting away this morning, but I had to talk to you. What were you doing at the Kuchner widow's place, Jill?
I studied Carp for a few moments. Internal Affairs? No wonder you're paranoid. Still, Carp was a good cop, with a finely tuned sense of the weird. He knew when to call me in and get out of my way. He also taunted Saul mercilessly, and came off as an asshole sometimes. Nobody's perfect. Marv was Monty's partner back in the day, and the suicide didn't look right, so Monty asked me to poke. I have to say, it's looking less and less like suicide and more like someone's hiding something.
Only a few $1 million and 30 dead people at last count. Kuchner was dirty, Kismet. As dirty as they come.
But Monty...
Montaigne's under review. I don't like it any more than you do. You think he's involved?
Monty? Hell no. Why would he ask me to take a look at it? Would there be any reason for someone to try to kill me because I'm poking around in this?
Let me put it this way. I wish I was wearing some fucking Kevlar ass plugs. This is big, Kiss.
Yeah, thanks. I got that. Are you going to take it from the top, or are you going to be all cryptic? This isn't the only iron I have in the fire.
Actually, I was going to ask you to help me. Since you're already involved, you might as well.
I so do not have time for this. What are we dealing with, Carp? Use small words and speed it up.
You remember a Barrio case about 3 years ago? Two illegal immigrants found in a cheap-ass room, kidneys gone, blood on the walls?
Nope. Unless something my style hinky was involved, I don't.
I remember that. The Herald did a long series on organ thievery. At all-time high nationwide, they said. Whole underground economy.
Cold fingers walked up my spine again. The last huge paranormal incident in the city had touched on black market organ trade, but only briefly. By the time I'd unraveled it, everyone was already dead, the organs were sold, and I'd almost become a host for a Chaldean elder god. I still have nightmares from that. Just like the hundreds of other cases I have nightmares about. At least if I'm dreaming about it, I know it's over and done with. Sullivan and Badger were on that, weren't they?
They got yanked. Sullivan thinks someone high up is involved, since there were more deaths than could be accounted for, even with whatever happened with those hooker murders you were chasing. But still, they were pulled off it, and the files were put in a deep freeze. We think whoever's profiting mostly strips wetbacks of their kidneys because they're a transient population.
Nice language. Okay, so what does this have to do with...
I think there's cops finding illegals for stripping and cleaning up after it happens. A real body farm. It's a safe bet the cash is laundered, but I don't know how. I don't think Marv Kuchner ate his Glock. He was in too deep and making too much money. That shitty little suburban house was small potatoes. He had plans to retire to a nice tropical paradise.
Who doesn't? Another question arrived, flirting at the corner of my consciousness. I never found out who they were selling the organs to. I assumed it was out of town, since I didn't find anything here afterward, and there I was, caught assuming. There was always a market for organs. I hadn't thought the Sorrows would foul their own nest, but I'd been kept running around after other cases, chasing my tail. By the time I'd caught wind of their operation, they were winding down. They could very well have been supplying brokers inside the city. The distribution network for organs was probably even better funded than the one for drugs. Where there's a will and a profit, there's always a way to get a product to someone who needs it. If they can pay. So, if it wasn't suicide, why did Kuchner die?
Jacinta Kuchner was an accountant. Her office was tossed, as well as her bedroom. We think she had a set of cooked and uncooked books, either in the office or in the safe in her closet. Yesterday, a blue bit it.
Officer Winchell. Was he implicated too?
only up to his eyeballs. Would it surprise you to know Winchell and Kuchner's grieving widow were having an affair?
Well, that puts a new shine on things. You do such fine police work, Karp. What do you need me for?
The trail dead ends with Marv's retirement fund disappearing. All half a million of it. I think the widow was about to blow the whistle on the whole dirty deal, or she double-crossed someone and hid the money. Maybe she even loved her husband, I don't know. But without her, and without the books, and without Marv and Winchell, we have exactly what we started out with. Dead wetbacks and a whole lot of nothing.
Oh, and here I was, getting all bent out of shape over victims. That doesn't tell me what you want.
I want to know how far up this goes. I have to tell you, Kiss, I'm willing to break a few laws to do it. And you're one of us, but you don't have a lot of the same limits that I do.
Someone tried to kill me the other day. Jesus, was that only yesterday? They didn't use silver-coated ammo, which leads me to believe someone knows Monty's called me in and feels just a wee bit threatened.
You think? Marv and Winchell weren't the only ones to end up dead over this. 6 months ago, Pedro Ayala over in Vice stumbled across something, gave me a call, and turned up dead less than 4 hours later, before I could meet him. It's filed as a random gang-related shooting since I did the gang beat. He was tight with a few of the old-school 51s. Their territory, a chunk in the barrio near the plaza. He used to run with the oldsters before he turned all law-abiding. I can't get any of them to talk to me about him.
I vaguely remembered Ayala from rookie orientation. Slim, dark, and intense. They blur together inside my head sometimes. All those cops. Each and every one of them passing through my hands before they're allowed out on the streets. You'd think I'd feel better about that.
They won't talk to me or to Bernie, his partner, but it doesn't seem possible that one of them pulled the trigger on him. He was out of La Vida since he was 16, but he once or twice brought in some of the 51s as material witnesses during a turf war.
Did they walk afterward?
When the killing stopped. I was a good cop. He didn't deserve lungs full of lead. The coroner said it probably took him 10 minutes to suffocate on his own blood.
I can relate.
You want me to go into the barrio and poke around the 51s?
I'm asking for a hot chunk of lead if I go down there. Monty's already called you in, Jill.
He was serious. The trouble was, I was asking for more than one hot chunk of lead if I went into the barrio. The wares run herd out there and keep everything under control. I know the streets and alleys. There's not a slice of my city I don't know by now. But going into the depths of Santa Luz's other dark half isn't something to be done lightly if your skin is my color.
All right. Hand over the file.
This is what I got so far. A collection of fucking dead ends. If you can make something of it...
Dead ends don't mean the same thing to me that they do to you. Theron. Keep your head down, Karp. I'd hate to lose you just when I've gotten you toilet trained. As I stepped outside, I slid my shades on. The sun was a hammer blow even this early in the morning.
No news. Maybe that was the main nest. Maybe we got them all.
I'm not so sure. They were too old. I'd feel better if we knew, instead of guessing. And I'd feel a lot better if we could have ID'd some of the scurf as our missing people. Good fucking luck doing that. Scurf all look the same. Or I could have asked that skunk-haired breed some questions.
I'd feel a lot better if you hadn't just volunteered to go down in the barrio. I suppose this is something else I'm not supposed to tell Saul about?
I never told you not to tell him anything. I go where I have to, Theron.
This sounds like a human affair.
So are Scurf, if you look at it the right way.
Just pointing it out.
Don't ride anywhere. I know you don't have to come along, Theron. Telling him that would be a direct insult, since Theron had appointed himself my backup. It would imply I didn't have any faith in his capacity to defend himself. Wares are funny about things like that. He apparently decided he'd pushed me far enough.
When are you going in?
Well, if I wait for nightfall, it'll only get more dangerous. But sunlight's best for hunting Scurf. If they find anything while doing sweeps, you'll know, right?
Of course. Well, do you think they're connected?
What?
The Scurf and this.
Jesus, and a sidecar, I hope not. I don't know. I'm not assuming they are. There's no visible connection.
Something's off. They were too old, and too many of them.
I know. But a hellbreed busting in on a scurf nest? There's one small note off here, and it's throwing the entire orchestra out of whack. If this gets much deeper, I'm gonna have to do something drastic.
Like what?
Like something unsafe.
More unsafe than the Barrio?
Visiting Perry makes the Barrio look like a cakewalk wear. Much, Theron. Now shut up, I need to think.
I'll say you do.
I let it go. A wear sometimes needs the last word. It makes them feel better. Santa Luz's Barrio isn't a shanty town, though it has a forest of shacks on the edge between suburb and desert where even the wares go in pairs when they have to run through. There is the Plaza Centro, which used to be a railroad station but is now a mercado with a giant mezzanine, the center of the Barrio's seethe. There are bodegas on every corner, and Catholic or Pentecostal churches sprinkled throughout, sometimes even in abandoned storefronts. The rest of the Barrio is quiet, watchful streets. Violence occurs pretty rarely in most of its sprawl, but it's always a breath away. The feeling is like a storm hanging overhead, ready to toss thunderbolts at the slightest provocation. A crackling edge of expectation blurs the air, and your entire skin turns into a sensitive canvas, ready to catch any breath, any faint tingle that might warn you a half second before a bullet punches through your meat. The 51s run in the south part of the Barrio, in a wedge-shaped territory with its thin end pointing at the plaza. Centro and the wider trailing hind end spread almost halfway through the closest slice of Shackville, what bigots in my fair city mostly call Cholo Central, or, in slightly more politically correct terms, that goddamn sinkhole. I surveyed the pockmarked sloping street. The music came from the bodega on the corner. Cholos lounged on every front porch. Two driveways down, a vintage orange Nova was up on blocks with someone's head under the hood. Two men in flannel shirts with only the top button buttoned, clutching cold bottles of Corona, frijoles and sweat, beer and cumin, chili sauce and hot burning wax from novenas all mixed together, with the tang of poverty underneath. A bald edge of desperation, marijuana fumes, and old food. Down here, Theron looked normal. The darker tone of his skin and the strangeness of his bone structure became mestizo instead of just plain brown person.
You sure you want to do this, Joe?
I go where I have to. Why don't you put that nose of yours to good use and find me a 51?
This whole street is theirs, Hunter. But we're going to see Ramon.
Head honcho? I didn't ask Theron how he knew all this. He was a wayer. This was his part of town. Most wares in Santa Luz live either on the fringe of the Barrio or in a narrow corridor between it and Mayfair Hill, where the houses have been in the same families, packs, and prides for generations.
Lieutenant, he'll give you a safe conduct if you act nice and polite. Let me do the talking.
I wouldn't have it any other way. I slid my shades on. The sensation of eyes on me was palpable, my hackles rising and the scar prickling with dense wet heat, almost living heat, like a flower opening under sunlight. The scar's not growing. Don't even think about it. Instead, I thought about the black market trade in organs. I would have to meet up with Sullivan and Badger if I had time, and if I could do it without endangering them. I thought about why a hellbreed would burst in on a scurf nest in the middle of a fight, and the thing that occurred to me was so plain and simple, I stopped in my tracks.
Jill? Everything copacetic?
Scurf don't attack hellbreed. Their I-cord doesn't carry any hemoglobin or the right proteins for the viral agents.
So?
So someone is probably profiting from the scurf. Nobody would want to kill me in the middle of a scurf hole just because I'm annoying. Someone is making money. And there could be a connection to this other case. Profit's a strong incentive. And what makes scurf so dangerous?
They're contagious.
And cannibalistic. What better way to get rid of the bodies? I hate to assume these two cases are linked, but it isn't out of the ballpark. Murder attempts from nightsiders and normals when I'm working a nightside and a normal case means they could very well be connected.
It's a lot of assuming.
If a better idea comes along, I'll latch onto it. We move towards a ratty adobe house sandwiched between a gas station and a ramshackle tenement taking up most of a block. Its sliver of lawn was weedy but neat, and the sidewalk in front of the chain-link gate had been freshly swept and sprinkled with Florida water, if the ghost of orange perfume in the air was any indication. It was interesting. But of course, down in the barrio, you find all sorts of interesting things. Baron opened the gate for me, and the feeling of being watched intensified. My hands itched to touch a gun butt, but I carefully kept them loose and easy. I know I look odd, wandering around in a black ankle-length leather trench coat in the middle of a southwestern summery simmer isn't the best way to appear harmless. Plus, there was the silver in my long, dark, curling hair, throwing back darts of light. And the pale cast to my skin wasn't guaranteed to blend me in either. Theron and I climbed the steps to the wooden porch. A young cholo with a fedora, a white dress shirt, red suspenders, and a pair of natty, sharp-creased chinos eyed us from the door. He had a face that could have come off a codex. It wouldn't have looked out of place under a quetzal feather headdress. Dark eyes met mine, flicked down my body, and dismissed me, moving over to Theron.
Hey, gato, qué horrido?
¿Qué onda, homies? Ramon in?
Who's la puta?
This is la señora Bruja Grande de Santa Luz, cabrón. Watch your mouth. Is Ramon in? Or do I get to go to the cantina?
Bruja Grande?
The cholo peered at my face again. I slid my shades a touch down my nose and gave him the double barrel impact of my mismatched stare. The reaction was gratifying.
Madre de Dios.
Sudden chemical fear glazed his smell of healthy young man, and he forked the evil eye at me.
Get Ramon, hombre. It's business.
Mi casa, su casa, gato.
Don't worry, kid. I'm harmless. At least to you. I followed Theron over the threshold and into the quiet cool of a real adobe. The entryway was gloomy, but my eyes adjusted rapidly, just in time to see the cholo make a swift gesture, index fingers out, thumbs up. A short stabbing motion.
Iron!
Come on. You know the iron mean less than nothing. Who the hell are you, anyway?
Paco. Ramon's mi tío.
Then go fetch him, Paquito. I don't like waiting.
In the shadows, I could see Theron lift his upper lip, giving Paco a glance at his teeth. He seemed to get a few inches taller, his shoulders broadening. He was puffing up for my benefit. Theron stepped forward, looming over Paco. The boy flinched, covered it up well, and retreated up two swift steps before turning on his heel and hurrying into the adobe's gloom.
I take it these are friends of yours, Theron?
My fingers relaxed, and I controlled a sharp flare of irritation. My heart rate had picked up, walloping along harder than it should. Theron leaned against the wall, all hip-shot wear grace.
We like to know who's doing what out here. You okay?
Peachy.
I smelled Ramon before I saw him. The cologne was musky, mixing with the smell of healthy male and dominance every charismatic man exhales. I also smelled metal and cordite, and my palms itched for a gun.
Settle down, Jill. He's only human, after all. He couldn't even break you out in a sweat.
The voice of reason didn't help. I calmed myself with an effort. The scar prickled, sensitive to the tightening of my aura. Cholos run to two types, beanpole and brick shithouse. Ramon was the latter, wide and chunky, the 51's color showing on his do-rag and knotted around his left biceps. He had a broad, cheerful face and eyes as cold as leftover coffee. He also had a cannon of a .45 stuck in his waistband and looked about ready to blow his own balls off with pure machismo.
Hey.
He greeted Theron. His gaze barely flicked over me, lingered on my breasts under my t-shirt, completely dismissed the guns and knives, and returned to the ware.
Paquito's a fucking idiot. You want a beer, Ese?
Love one. This is Kismet, Bruja Grande. She'd probably like a beer, too.
What you here for?
Pedro Ayala.
What for? He dead.
Whoever killed him is fucking with me and mine.
Pedro was one of yours.
He was a cop, and that makes him one of mine. He was. I'm after whoever unloaded on him, senor. And Theron was right. I would also like a beer. The gangbanger's eyes didn't get any warmer, but his shoulders dropped. He eyed me from top to bottom again, then shifted his inspection to Theron, who spread his hands and shrugged in the particular way wares have, not volunteering an opinion, but giving polite consent to listen to whatever the questioner wants to say next. My fingers stopped itching for a gun, and the scar quit prickling as his fear stopped drenching the close air of the foyer. Ramon visibly decided it might not hurt to be sociable.
Come on into the kitchen, Bruja. I tell you about A.
It was a productive half hour. I ended up with a bandana in the 51's colors, a short lesson in how to wear it, and where in the barrio not to go when I had it on, and a full rundown on Pedro Ayala, the scene of his death, and who rumor said saw him gunned down and where to find them. Ramon promised to make a few calls, so I was greeted with courtesy, and not a hail of bullets if I went from door to door in 51 territory asking about a murdered cop. It was more than I'd hoped for. The beer didn't hurt either. Even my Impala wasn't stripped at the curb, which showed someone was watching when we trooped into Ramon's house. It was a good thing, too. The kid standing on the sidewalk couldn't have been more than 14, but his dark eyes were empty as a vacant lot, an emptiness I haven't seen on many non-nightsiders. Acne pocked his lean face, and I couldn't tell how long his hair was, since it was slicked down and trapped in a hairnet knotted on his dewy brown forehead. He wore a shining white wife beater over a torso all scrawny muscle, and I knew he was carrying, just from the way he stood. He considered me, and a chill rippled along the edge of my skin. The scar prickled. Even among normal humans with no scent of the night side, there are killers. This one stood easy and hip-shot, his dead eyes flicking down my body once. Not with a regular man's ticking off of breasts, ass, and desirability. No. This young man looked like he was evaluating my ability to interfere with him, and coming to an answer that had nothing to do with my gender. Score one for a surprise in the barrio, Jill. I eyed him, and my hand eased a little closer to a gun. He hooked his thumbs in the pockets of his well-pressed chinos, and his mouth turned into a thin line.
You looking for I, senora?
Pedro Ayala's dead. I'm looking to serve whoever did him in.
Why you want to do that?
Why do you want to know? The teen's thin shoulders went back, and his chin lifted. The sun gilded his thin arms and a chest that stood a good chance of being sunken, and the sullen fury passing over his face was shocking in its intensity, and just as shocking when the emotion fled and he went back to flatline. Of all things, he unhooked his right hand and offered it to me.
Gilberto Rosario Gonzalez Ayala. I was mi hermano.
I slowly clasped his hand, careful not to squeeze too hard. Hellbreed's strong fingers can make for a goddamn uncomfortable handshake. He was under no such compunction, bearing down with surprising strength, his entire arm tensed. They tell me your brother was shot in the lungs and drowned, senor. Whoever did him in is doing others just as bad. Worse even. I'm going to stop it.
Then you better watch your back, chiquita.
Thanks for the warning, senor.
Ain't no warning. It's fact.
I'm sure of that, Gilberto. Gracias.
Call me Gil, chiquita. You do who did I? You come down to nuestra casa here. I give you beer.
Thanks, kid. Like you're old enough to drink. I'll keep it in mind. Making friends and influencing people among all walks of life. That's your friendly neighborhood hunter.
Jill?
Yeah. Let's roll. Where next, gato?
Christ, don't you start too. Go west. We'll cut across on Antilles. Isn't that where he got shot?
Antilles and Tabasco, the 3100 block. Good idea to check it out, at least.
Well, that's not 51 friendly over there. Put that bandana away.